It's time for the VolQuest podcast, where we dissect the biggest news items of the week.
Hey, good Tuesday morning, everybody. Welcome to the VolQuest podcast. I'm Eric Kane, alongside Rob Lewis, Brent Hubbs, and Austin Price, presented as always by our friends over at Exterior Home Solution. They've been local and trusted since 1999. That phone number for a free estimate is 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. College football playoff expansion. Seems like that's going to be happening in the very near future, as we all predicted. Baseball opening weekend, pretty much what you'd expect. A really bad team against a pretty good team, three-run rules. But let's start out with a come-from-behind victory on the hardwood. Tennessee basketball, Rob Lewis, got a win that it had to have, and it certainly didn't look like they were going to get that win in the first half.
No, not at all. I mean, it's a cliche, or we all use it too much, but a tale of two halves. But man, that one really was. I mean, it's not unusual in college basketball to see, you know, one team really, you know, play, have some wild swings from one half to another. But that was extreme, what you saw on Saturday, even in this game. I mean, it was to go down, you know, be down 16, and it wasn't just the scoreboard. I mean, they looked flat. I mean, Hubbard, I mean, would you not agree? They just did not look ready to play. Like, they weren't meeting the emotion or intensity that Vanderbilt brought out there. That's, you know, just, you didn't expect to see that in an SEC game. I mean, they made up for all their sins in the second half, but boy, that was an eye opener early.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the interesting things about this team, and I want to hear more from Rick Barnes whenever he speaks, you know, this week, whether it's coach's show or whatever, is it's becoming a routine message. And Rob, I don't know if it's cliché or if it's just a routine message of frustration from Rick about they're not taking whatever is said in the locker room and the game plan and the discussion of things out to the court in the first half. You know, I mean, you go back to the Missouri game. What did he say? He talked about how they didn't do all the things they talked about in the locker room coming out onto the floor. They didn't carry that to the floor. Same thing with Vanderbilt. Same thing with Kentucky and Knoxville. It's a bit of a disturbing trend, I think, with this team when you have the veteran leadership that they have with Ziegler and Mayshak. And I know there's a lot of other parts, but you're 26 games into the season, whatever you are now, and the things that, you know, the final message in the locker room, the scouting report, you go out and you don't follow that at the start of the game. Now, I understand if adjustments take place, but to not start that way, I think, is a bit perplexing with this basketball team. That's one of the interesting things for me. Tennessee's been really good in the second half. When you look at their offensive numbers and what they've done the last few games, I mean, they've played well in the second half. I know Oklahoma, they shot the lights out in the first half. But outside of that, it's been beyond a labor the first 20 minutes, and it's been riddled with mistakes that Rick Barnes keeps talking about. I find that really interesting about this team.
I agree. I think what – Brent just said is problematic. When you have a veteran team and you got Zakai coming out after the game talking about, well, we didn't do what we were supposed to based off the scout in the first half. I mean, like, that's like getting the answers to the test and then going, yeah, I'm just gonna ad lib it. You know, I mean, like, it doesn't make any sense, especially when you've got such a group of older guys. And to have this happen a few times now, to me, is a bit of a head scratcher.
I mean, what do you make of it, Rob? I mean, is that overblown when you look at things? Is that just kind of Rick's clutch answer when they don't play well?
I don't think it's necessarily cliche, but he touched on this. He touched on it last Friday, I guess, before the game, and then again in the post game. And we say veteran, and because you look at, you know, fifth year guys and, you know, fourth year guys, but, you know, three of those dudes that are playing huge minutes, you know, they have played a lot of college basketball. They've not played a lot of college basketball here or in the SEC. And I'm not, you know, casting stones at Chaz or Igor or Felix, and, you know, Dubar to a lesser degree, but those first three play, you know, huge minutes and are a big part of the puzzle. I don't know if they're used to being locked in like you have to be locked in this program. And I don't think it's an effort thing with them. I think it's just, you know, you take for granted. We're talking about Zakai and Jamari, but they've been here for 4 years. You know, Josiah and Santiago were here. We're in it for 5 years. And I just think it becomes a way of life, of, you know, manner of habit, and to be locked in, you know, to do things at the level that Rick demands. And, you know, I don't know if that's the answer, but Coach has kind of touched on it twice here in the last, you know, 3 or 4 days, and, you know, without calling out, you know, all those guys by name, but by mentioning that, you know, hey, they've never done it at this level for, you know, 6 weeks or 8 weeks, you know, game in and game out. And I think there may be something to that.
What I want to know is what's going on with the defense? And I know we kind of talked on this and not, you know, looking at the scouting report and not starting games off the way they're supposed to, but, you know, 44 points in that first half, that's a ton of points. And Tennessee hangs their hats on defense, but here in a couple of these games, they've just had really poor showings. Obviously, the second half defense was superb, but that first half defense was not. I mean, why was it such an easy flip of the switch, essentially, from one half to another?
I mean, I don't have the answer to that, or maybe I'd make Everett Morris's paycheck, but I think a lot of it was just, you know, talking to Coach and talking to some people after the game. I mean, he really did challenge some guys. I mean, I think he got in Jamai's, or not Jamai, excuse me, Zakai's face, or maybe not necessarily in his face, but certainly challenged him in a, you know, one-on-one, you know, what are you even doing? Are you a man manner that, you know, him and Zakai, I don't think, you know, get to very often anymore with the level of respect that they have. So I think that was a huge part of it. I mean, I think he lit a fire under Zakai, and I think Zakai lit a fire under his teammates. And, you know, 5'9", 29 point, or 22 points in the second half. And, you know, he didn't go off from three at three three-pointers, but it wasn't like he just, you know, hit six of them out there, four assists. I mean, he was – I thought Zakai was really, really impressive in that second half. And, again, that may be oversimplifying it, but I think the biggest difference was that the head coach, you know, jerked his point guard chain and stuff started happening.
Rob, do you think Zakai has to be – score first for this team? Because it certainly feels like when he is, they seem to excel more. And at times, I think, especially early in games, he takes a back seat trying to be a facilitator and distributor. Do you think he probably needs to do that, you know, be more, I won't say me first, but, you know, look to score early than he has?
I wouldn't say score first, but, yeah, he can't ignore it, AP. I mean, if you look the other day, I mean, that's not the only reason Tennessee had, you know, 26, 28 points at halftime, but he had no points at halftime. And more importantly, had to what you're talking about, I think he'd only taken two shots in the first half and, you know, played a ton of minutes like he always does. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's part of it. But, you know, also I think he's very conscious of getting guys involved. I mean, more conscious than he was – you know, more conscious than most young point guards are, but I think that's a big deal to him. I think that's something that him and Coach talk about. So, you know, but he's got to balance that. I mean, I think you're exactly right. He can't take two shots and a half.
Rob, why are they finding it offensively in the second half?
I don't know.
I mean, you had 40 points at home against Kentucky in the second half and a rally that came up short, 40 points against Florida at home, 57 against Missouri, 38 at Kentucky, where you couldn't do anything in the final 5 minutes of that basketball game offensively. So you're in pretty good shape up until then. I think they started 7 or first 8 in the second half. And then they had 50 points against Vanderbilt. Like, what's the switch? Like, is that adjustments? Is that, you know, I mean, way you can put a finger on that?
Well, I mean, just again, I'm just relaying what I'm hearing from Coach or talking to some other people in the program, and it's not, you know, they won't tell you, or they won't say that there's a magic, you know, magic move that they're making at halftime. I mean, maybe, you know, some small adjustments here and there, but mostly it's about, guys, we're not doing what we talked about. You know, you can't, you know, we talked about not letting this guy get the ball here, not let, you know, just so I'm just going on what people are telling me, what I'm hearing. And it's not like, you know, coaches reinventing the wheel at halftime. It's more like, you know, guys, who, for whatever reason, what we talked about initially, you're not taking the game plan to the hardwood.
So does that give you, I mean, everybody jump in here. Does that give you more encouragement about this team because of what they've been able to do in the second half, that if you put 40 minutes together, then here you go? I mean, obviously there's some, a small minority of Tennessee fans who just don't like this team, right? I mean, this team doesn't move the needle for them for whatever reason. But when you look at those numbers in the second half, do you feel like, hey, boy, if this team can do something in the first half, man, they got a chance to make a real run? Or is it more of a, you know, they're not desperate enough in the first half and the pressure of the tournament's going to get to them in the second half? I mean, what do you look at when you look at the outlook of this team?
I just don't think you can count them out, right? I mean, they've been outs on, you know, one of these games. Florida, they were never in the game, and it was, you know, they lost by 30. But the game here this past weekend, Missouri, it's frustrating, and it shouldn't happen this way. You don't need to dig yourself in a hole. So I guess I would take the stance of it's more encouraging that, like, okay, well, if you get a little bit of a hole, gosh, you come out and make a couple stops in the second half, you're probably going to climb out of this thing and then have a chance to go win it. That's the way I look at it because we've seen it a couple times this year. But also, again, like I said, it's very frustrating. You shouldn't be down 16 in the first half to Vanderbilt at home. So that's annoying, but I would still lean on the side of encouraging.
I mean, I think it's encouraging in the light of how they've won a couple of these games, and it's by scoring 57 points against Missouri, you know, scoring 50 against Vandy in the second half of these games. And, you know, outside of, you know, the Dalton team last year, if this team, you know, melded in and was down 16 in the first half, they were, you know, they might win that game, but they would have to almost pitch a shutout in the second half. They weren't going to do it by coming back and scoring 50. You know, so that's where I would be encouraged, is this the explosiveness, but yeah, the inconsistency here, you know, 10 days away from March. Yeah, I mean, I think that's worrisome, but also, you know, the ceiling, the offensive ceiling they've shown, you know, they've certainly shown you their offensive floor, scoring in the 20s and some halves, but but yeah, I mean, scoring 50 plus in an SEC game, that's, to me, that's encouraging. I mean, and doing it multiple times here in the last few weeks, that's encouraging.
It's why their floor and ceiling for this team could be very far apart, right? I mean, they could get bounced first weekend. You know, if they make shots and defend, they could, you know, I'm not saying go all the way, but they could certainly be knocking on the door of a Final Four, depending on matchups and how they're shooting at the time. You know, it just feels like anything is possible with this team, good or bad.
They could get St. Peter's in the first round, or you know, they could make a run. And again, nothing. I don't think, and I think most Tennessee fans would agree that nothing will really surprise them.
Rob, Chaz Lanier took the ball to the rim twice and finished on Saturday. Big development or overblown?
I mean, I think it's overblown in the fact that, I mean, he's been. It's not the first time that he's tried to do it. I mean, I think the finishes are a nice touch, but if you go back and look, that's not a new development. I mean, Coach drew it up for him at the end of the Vanderbilt game on the road when Tennessee had to have it. I mean, the confidence is there that he can do it from the staff. I mean, I guess it's maybe a real positive development for Chaz, but I don't think he doubts that he can do it. Now, maybe, you know, something clicks in his head, but I don't think he's adverse to going to the hoop. Now, he's not been a great finisher. I would be the first to jump on that train, but not something the staff, you know, lacks confidence in, I don't think.
Five games remaining in the regular season. Got a couple of big ones, obviously. You know, A&M next Saturday, or this coming Saturday. Alabama the following Saturday, and so on and so forth on in the SEC tournament. Two questions real quick. How big is the midweek off this week, just to get some rest, recovery, and all that? And secondly, I don't know, five games, what does Tennessee need to go to kind of keep status quo, kind of on that two line? I know other things around them could change that if teams lose or whatever, if Tennessee makes a run. But as we've seen in years past, if you win the SEC tournament, I don't think the committee really takes that into consideration unless it's for an at-large. What does Tennessee need to do to kind of keep the status quo of being on that two line?
Hubbard, I would say, I mean, the computers, the you know, the talking heads in college basketball, they've got a lot more respect for Tennessee than their own fans do. Mm-hmm. I think when you talk about, you know, their postseason resume and what they think about in the tournament. So I would, you know, I could end up being wrong, but I think win your home games and you maintain the status quo. I mean, you might not be the top two seed like they were in the bracket reveal on Saturday, but you know, I think a 2-3 finish, which would include a Bama win at home, would keep you on that line, would be my guess.
Yeah, I mean, I look at them. I mean, LSU's playing better. That was a big rally for them at Oklahoma when Oklahoma gave that game away. But you certainly look at that as a game on the road that you've got a shot to, you know, you got a good shot to win at. South Carolina's winless in conference play. A&M's going to be hard because that's a tough matchup for Tennessee. That's been a tough matchup for Tennessee. When Tennessee's been elite, that game's been hard because you know what you're going to get from their defense. That's going to be a bloodbath of physicality. There'll be a lot of eyes on that Alabama game because there's a lot of talk about Alabama and their finish and who they have to play to close here. And I'm not saying anybody's questioning Alabama, but I think there's some people wondering, you know, how good Alabama really is because now they're getting into the meat of their schedule. So that game's going to draw a lot of eyes, you know, at home, and that should be a pretty rocking atmosphere. So, you know, again, I think Rob pointed it out best, AP. I mean, the national pundits like this team. I mean, even when they've lost a game, they've not. I mean, they were a one seed going to Kentucky, right? I mean, they were back on the one line. Now, I don't know if they would get there or not, but I mean, they've consistently been, you know, one of the top eight seeds in this tournament all season long, and it feels like they've got a great shot to stay there as long as they don't collapse down the stretch.
Yeah, it feels like they've never really even dropped below six. I mean, like they, you know, they've been, no matter how much they've lost in league play, it's just not affected them because of how they've lost. They've got the one bad loss to Florida. To me, the next five, the two games that stand out to me are obviously, you know, A&M. Wade Taylor seems like he always has a shot maker against Tennessee, and he's starting to kind of come into his own a little bit after being on kind of a, I wouldn't call it a slump, but not Wade Taylor esque.
Well, he missed some time too. He was banged
up.
But
also that game at Ole Miss. Now Mississippi State won at Ole Miss this past weekend, so that obviously, means they're certainly not invincible at home. But that team, the way they play, Chris Beard has them playing really good basketball. To me, that'll be a tougher game for Tennessee. So, I think those two road games. I don't really worry about LSU as much. I mean, obviously, road games are road game, and it's hard to win. But the Ole Miss game and the A&M game are the two games I think Tennessee's got to find a way to split them. Win one of those two. If you can win one of those two and take care of your business at home, and I'm chalking up LSU as a win, which is probably my mistake. But you know, then I think you finish 4-1 down the stretch, and to me, that gets you at minimum a two seed.
God, you finish 4-1 down the stretch. I think they'd be a one seed.
One, yeah.
I think they finished 2-3 that are two seed.
It's going to be interesting to see what the tournament committee, and here we go talking about committees. That'll come up a little later in this podcast as well. But what are they going to view the SEC tournament as? Right, Rob? Because, I mean, like, you got a bunch of teams vying for a one seed in this league. How much, I mean, in years past, you're talking about, you know, you don't put a whole lot of stock in the SEC tournament. How much more stock does this tournament have this year because of the jockeying with where Florida's surging to? You got Auburn, you got Alabama, you got Tennessee there. Texas A&M's a potential surging team. You know, I think it's going to be how much stock do they put in this conference tournament compared to years past?
Man, I mean, just based on how things have happened in the past, I'm not in the room. I don't know. I think that the only thing I would think they use it for is tiebreakers between SEC teams.
Do the teams look at it kind of like they do the baseball tournament, where it's like I'd rather rest and get ready for the big dance than have.
Yeah, I mean, if you're Tennessee,
especially this year with so many good teams.
Well, I mean, history. If you're Tennessee, history definitely tells you that's the route to go. But for this year, with the way things are at the top, I mean, you in the bracket reveal on Saturday, they had, you know, six of the top eight teams were SEC teams. So I would think that, you know, if Tennessee's playing Florida, Texas A&M's playing Florida, Tennessee's playing Texas A&M in Nashville, and I think maybe the selection committee uses that to, you know, move somebody up or down between those two teams head to head. But big picture wise, after the way Tennessee's been, you know, treated for winning the thing, and I'll be surprised if it has a lot of weight in the field of 68.
Well, Sunday doesn't count. I mean, Sunday you should treat it like an NBA All-Star game and just not dress. I mean, because at that point the bracket's done. We've seen that. The history of that is already there, and the fact the SEC has not been able to move that championship game out of Sunday means that game is rendered pointless at this point. I'm just wondering how much stock they put into Thursday, Friday, and even Saturday compared to previous years.
The crazy thing is Wednesday. Wednesday's going to matter for some of these teams. As crazy as it is in this league. I mean, if the tournament's going to matter, Wednesday's going to matter for sure.
I mean, let's say Tennessee rematches with Florida. That, you know, the winner.
That's the kind of thing I'm talking about.
Would have won two out of three, you know.
And so I would say if those two teams are playing, that might be the difference between a one or a two seed. If those two teams, but I don't think it helps Tennessee versus Iowa State.
Yeah,
you know,
when you're talking about comparing resumes. Yeah. Okay.
Basketball is hitting the final stretch here of the regular season. Of course, no better place to keep up with Rick Barnes and the Tennessee basketball team than right here at VolQuest.com. The college football playoffs, should it expand again? And if it expands, how many automatic qualifiers should the SEC and the Big Ten get into the dance? Interesting discussions going on this week with athletic directors across the country. We'll hit on that and more as we continue here on the VolQuest podcast. Are you ready to optimize your nutrition this year? Factor has chef-made gourmet meals that make eating well super easy. Dietitian approved, ready to heat in 2 minutes so you can fuel up and feel great no matter what life throws your way. Factor arrives fresh and fully prepared, perfect for any active, busy lifestyle. Lose up to 8 pounds in 8 weeks with Factor Keto meals based on a randomized controlled clinical trial of Factor Keto. Results will vary depending on diet and exercise. With 40 options across 8 dietary preferences on the menu each week, it's easy to pick meals tailored to your goals. Choose from preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, or Keto Friendly. Factor can help you and live your best and feel your best all day long with wholesome smoothies, breakfasts, grab-and-go snacks, and even more add-ons. Reach your goals this year with ingredients that you can trust, the convenience that you simply can't beat. Eat smart with Factor. Go to get started with factormeals.com/factorpodcast. Use the promo code FACTORPODCAST to get 50% off your first box plus free shipping. That's code FACTORPODCAST at factormeals.com/factorpodcast to get 50% off plus free shipping on your next box. Go ahead and check out Factor Meals today.
Hey, Sterling, man, come on. We got a roster replay.
Let's go, baby.
Let's go.
Hey, Sterl, you ready to go to the top?
Man, I can't believe you guys been doing this for 25 years. Oh, baby.
Now, this is what I call a rooftop party.
We have 25 years experience in roofing and exterior renovations, and we're backed by the best.
Are you ready to get your rooftop party started? Give us a call, 865-524-5888.
As always, big thank you to our friends Exterior Home Solutions, 865-524-5888, or you can visit them online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. They are local and trusted since 1999. All right, 2024, we saw the first year of the expanded playoff, 12 teams. Tennessee was one of those teams, and it went on, and you had the Ohio State crowned national champion all the way on January the 20th, 21st, whatever it was. But first team in the expanded 12. Should the playoffs expand even further? I don't think it's a matter of should they or shouldn't they. It's a matter of when is that going to happen. Conversations, as Brent pointed out on the board over the weekend, athletic directors from the SEC, the Big Ten, going to be meeting in New Orleans this week. And they're going to be discussing how they're going to expand these college football playoffs. And Ross Dellinger put out a story over here at Yahoo Sports that kind of outlined what this could look like, either 14 or 16 teams following a model of 4-4, which is four automatic qualifiers for the SEC, for the Big Ten, then 2-2, two from the ACC, two from the Big 12, one, which would be Notre Dame if it qualifies, and then, of course, one group of five. Interesting stuff. A lot to unpack here as well, because if you go to this, Brent, then down the line, you will make the switch to finally to 9 conference games in the SEC. But overall, your thoughts, we'll see what comes of this. We'll see if anything happens over the next couple weeks. But expand the playoffs, 14 or 16, with 4 AQs for the SEC and the Big Ten.
Well, first of all, you're not going to 9 games unless TV gives you more money. You just keep playing 8. So,
well, I thought that was a given, essentially.
Well, I mean, to get to 9, that money's going to have to get there. And I think it will. I mean, all of this is about cash. Okay, let's be really clear here about what this is. Everybody's got to make more money. I mean, there's no doubt that the Big Ten and the SEC, for all the talk about the smaller schools not having enough money and, well, what do they do from a rev share standpoint and everything else, all the Power Four schools need more cash. So how do you generate more cash? Well, your best product is your college football playoffs. Now, the question becomes, when are you maximizing that cash, Rob Lewis, and when are you diluting the product? Are you diluting the product at 16 teams? Are you diluting the product in any way at 14 teams? I think it's a given it's going to 14. I think 16 is more interesting. But I think when you look at it, is 4 automatic qualifiers from the Big Ten and the SEC too many, in the league? I mean, are you diluting the regular season? One of the beauties of this current year, this past year, was the fact that November was so important. Every game counted. You get four automatic qualifiers. How much does that dilute the regular season? Is that something that goes into consideration at all, or is this just all about cash and that part doesn't matter?
I mean, I don't think it dilutes it. I mean, the TV ratings will eventually tell us, but I don't think that it dilutes it. I mean, it might dilute the bowl games further, you know, a little bit, but, you know, I don't think that was – I mean, that happened this year, and, I mean, I think the benefits, the excitement of having the playoff far outweighed, you know, a bowl game being played on December 27th, having less, you know, of an important feel.
I mean, I was wrong. I thought going in this year that I thought the regular season would be polluted just a little bit. I thought that there is not 12 teams that deserve to play for a national championship. There's not 12 enough good teams. And then you saw the way this specific year played out, and it was like, huh, there's not one dominant team out there. I mean, Oregon's ranked number one, but is Oregon the best team? You know, what team looks good that week? And, of course, Tennessee got into the field. But, of course, you know, from the outside, one could argue, like, I mean, look at those first-round games. They're blowouts, right? So why are you continuing to go, you know, adding more teams to the dance, if you will? So I do think that's something. But overall, I mean, I was wrong. I thought this was, like, the best regular season that I can remember because, again, as you pointed out, I mean, late October, all of November, it's like, holy crap, you got to win this game or you're not making the playoffs. Or, oh, you can unseed this team. You can knock this team out of the playoffs. And what can happen? I mean, it was so much fun. I mean, it was a blast, and I think that will only continue. It doesn't matter if you had two more teams or, you know, four more teams. I think that part is going to continue in the regular season.
Well, it makes everybody feel like they've got a chance. And, yeah. You know, I mean, the first-round games were blowouts. But guess what? A team that was the eighth seed, now they were, what, sixth overall in the rankings because you had the two teams that got byes that were below them. Something they still like won the national title. I mean, a team that wasn't in the top four,
yep,
the overall rankings – won the national title because
the team that played wasn't in the top four either. Yeah.
Yeah. They were able to overcome the loss to Oregon and the terrible loss to Michigan. I mean, the four teams that got byes, now again, two of them probably not worthy, but all four of them that got byes got bounced. Like, you know, I mean, I think expanding it, does it dilute it? I don't know. I mean, everybody's going to say, well, there's not that many teams. Maybe, but like, it still makes for creative matchups and fun matchups, especially if you get rid of some of the whole, like, well, you know, the ACC deserves a bye, or the Big 12 deserves a bye, or whatever. Like, you know, just put the first top four teams, and if they're all Big 10 teams, if they're all SEC teams or whatever, you know, let them be the ones that get the byes. You know, there shouldn't be a, like, well, let's try to have equality and you know, make it fair for all the conferences.
According to this article from Ross Dellinger, the 14-team playoff top two seeds would get byes. There would be no buys in 16-team structure. So that's kind of interesting.
Well, and I don't know. I mean, do you like a buy? How did the buy teams do, right? Or do you want to keep playing? I mean, there's always those discussions. I mean, I think, look, the bottom line is this. It's expanding. Not in 25, but it's going to expand in 26. But because the reason it's going to expand is the new financial agreements. I mean, the SEC and the Big Ten are going to make more money off of the college football playoffs in 26. Through 31 than they have to this point. You know, they're the two conferences that are dictating these things. I mean, they are. And I know that the Big 12's got concerns and the ACC has concerns. But as Greg Sankey big boyed him and said, and it's at the bottom of that article, like, look, we tried to work on this a few years ago, and y'all drug your feet for 2 years. And we told all of you then, we'll just go do it. The Big Ten and I will just go figure it out. And basically they've gotten control of the college football playoff is what's ended up happening. And so it's going to change. Is it going to go 14? Is it going to go 16? I think the other fascinating part of this too, that's not discussed in that article that has to be examined is what does the calendar look like with it? I mean, what are you doing? I mean, is college football really comfortable playing the last Saturday in August and finishing their season at the end of January? Is that where they want to be? Do they want their national championship game on the open date before the Super Bowl? And then if that's the case, how do you marry things together with the NFL where you're not competing against the NFL?
And with the transfer portal.
I mean, that's the part. Look, I get it. And here's what we know, Rob. I mean, how many times have ADs, presidents, and people looked at something and went, wait a minute, you're going to write me how big of a check? Yeah, I'm good. Just write the check. And they don't examine the depths of all of it, right? We'll just take the check.
I mean, they've got to start earlier. I think they will. I mean, I think it's, you know, like you're talking about, too much money involved. I mean, I think everybody involved probably saw that, you know, for the, you know, bumping heads with the NFL in January. I mean, college football playoff got plenty of attention, but not, it would have been a much bigger deal if that thing happens, you know, right around the new year. And I don't know if you can do it under, I doubt you could do it on a traditional year, New Year's Day like the bowl games, but I mean, you can do it close. You can do it much closer than January 20th. There's a lot of dead time in December, and I know you get the transfer portal and recruiting. You got to figure out, but I mean, however you're talking about, you know, NFL or big television networks writing huge checks. I mean, they don't care about the transfer portal and, you know, coach having to work a 12-hour day. They want to program prime time on, you know, those first couple of weeks in December, and look at the inventory that they just got.
Well, and I don't know how many ADs are worried about what the December calendar looks like for a head football coach. I mean, you're making $9-10 million. I need, you know, I've got a $230 million budget. I need money, right? Like I need money to pay rev share, and I've got money. You know, we need money for all of these types of things, and we're sitting here looking at. I mean, potentially, if you add a conference game, that could be another $5 million. Well, that's big. I mean, that's a huge payout. You know, the payout in the playoff bigger. Nobody has a whole lot of sympathy in December for those guys when you look at how much money they're making. I'm not saying December's right. I think the month of December screwed completely up. But I think at the end of the day, it's a profit loss statement, and you need more profit in there. And an expanded college football playoff can bring more profit, which is what these guys are looking at, I think. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I mean, I think that's what this thing's going to ultimately end up being is, like, how can you get me the most money?
I think what you're looking at too is, I think you're looking at not having these big layoffs, like, you know, like this, you know, play next week, play again, next week, play again, like not having these.
How long did Georgia go without playing? You know, after the SEC championship game with their bye.
About three weeks. Right? Because, I mean, that championship game was first weekend of December, right? And they didn't play until the end of the month.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I mean, here's the problem.
Or New Year's Day.
And I'm getting – I agree with you guys. I mean, from a speed-it-up standpoint, but if you're a TV executive and you're ESPN, what's moving the needle from a rating standpoint in the wintertime? Is it college basketball games where there's – 16 on a night, you know, or is it football?
Football.
And if it's football, don't you want as many games as you can get in the month of January for football? Don't you want to be on center stage the week before the Super Bowl where everybody's watching MegaCast and all different versions of your national championship game, and that is the only game brewing? I mean, if you're a TV executive, I don't know that you're worried about somebody being off. You know, and I don't know that you're worried about bleeding into the next semester and all those things, because from an audience standpoint, how much better are you when you're the only game in town? Everybody's waiting on the Super Bowl. Oh, we have the national championship in football, and let's play it on Saturday,
please,
instead of on Monday night.
Well, I don't
do anything in the weekend.
I don't think they're worried about the transfer portal, the calendar. I think they got a lot of dead air. I mean, what are they showing in the third Saturday night and December, you know, Rudolph rerun, or, you know, Georgia versus Texas in the, you know, semifinals, if you speed it up.
But how do you, I mean, if you speed it up with expanded, with more games, more playoff games, then you're eliminating conference championship weekend.
Oh, I mean, who would care? Would you?
Well, I mean,
under Ross's this model, article, they would
go ahead, Eric.
I was gonna say, under this model, they would rank them straight from the college football playoff rankings, 1-14 or 1-16. So you would not need a conference championship to secure an automatic buy. But
the Hubbard's point, Greg Sankey probably had given that money back.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, that's a huge money maker.
Which is why it said in Ross's article, it might be a play-in type game for that fourth seed. If you're the SEC and you're the Big Ten. So now, instead of it being the championship game, it's, it's like going to Dayton to get in the tournament. It's a play-in type game.
You know, it would have been, what, Alabama and South Carolina this year?
Yeah.
Who would have watched that?
Everybody. Like, everybody, yeah. I mean, I'm for that. I mean, yeah.
It's good in some obscure location like Dayton. Like, you know.
Unlike Dayton.
But, I mean, you know, again, you're not looking to cut games. Obviously, you're looking to add games because at the end, there's going to be more revenue available to it when they're games that count. So what do you do with your regular season, you know, and how do you manage the calendar part of it is going to be pretty interesting.
When you think about little things like, obviously, transfer portal, new semesters, declaring for the NFL draft. Like, I mean, those dates, does that date have to move back? You know, because, I mean, like, what if a kid has a monster run in the playoffs and, you know, he could have catapulted himself into the draft, but all of a sudden he didn't declare because that was 2 weeks prior.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, there's a trickle-down effect to what we were talking about earlier that, you know, it's like people didn't think about the trickle-down effect of, oh, we'll just let name, image, and likeness. No rules. It's all good. You know, they didn't look at the trickle-down effect of what all happens with all this stuff.
No, I agree. I mean, they didn't look at the trickle-down effect of a December window, you know, early signing. I mean, they didn't look at any of those things, right? And now when you're talking about millions of dollars on the line, they're really not going to be looking at it. I mean, you know, it's like I see a check. I see a large amount of money. How can I get the most and out of that? Out of all those things in the Dellinger article that I thought was most, maybe one of the most fascinating and most compelling things for fans is the idea of the SEC and the Big Ten playing an SEC Big Ten football challenge, where instead of playing a payday game, right, and instead of going out and trying to scramble to find a Power 5 game against somebody in the Big 12 or the old Pac-10 or 12, whatever we're calling that now, now you get what you got to start the season. You get Michigan, Texas, right? You would get Ohio State, Alabama sometime during the season. And those two, that would be your Power 5 opponent for each league, is that they would just play each other. And then that could be another one-off for TV, a TV spectacular event that makes you more money. Hint, hint, more money, you know?
I bet, I don't know if they would do this. I remember the SEC, if they wanted to do that, the, you know, head coaches would trade that for a ninth game in a heartbeat.
Here's my question. Is that going
to – ninth conference game, I mean.
I think that would be neat if they did it as home and homes, you know, or at least
– you'd finally get to go to Seattle maybe.
Yeah. Since he's supposed to go there in a few years anyway. I'd like to go to Camp Randall.
Well, but see, here's the interesting thing too. When you look at scheduling, and I think we're going to see this coming down the pike a little bit, how many people are looking at where Indiana was and their schedule and go, you know what? We need to get out of a game, you know, potentially that's not a, you know, that it's a Power 5 game. We would be better off playing a weaker Power 5 opponent or a non-Power 5 opponent because it helps us get in the playoff. That's where ADs have to come and figure some of this stuff out quickly too, because you're talking about scheduling on down the line here, and how many people go the Indiana route and go the easier schedule path, you know, and put themselves in a better position to get in a playoff. Now, do you have to do that if you're in the, you know, you got four automatic bids in your league? My answer to that is probably not. But those are all of the trickle down things that come down the pike as well. Because I'm telling you, there are going to be some teams out there who move their schedule around to try to soften it, because they think it's going to give them a better chance to get in the playoff because of what happened to Indiana. It's going to happen, I think. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I think
you're right.
Hey, let's schedule a win, right? Let's find a way to get a win.
Megan, put that schedule back up on the screen. I mean, because she has it. Like, look at the top line. Take Syracuse out. Let's say that's just another weak, super weak team. Look at the first six games. I mean, like, you have Georgia, which is a home game. But the rest of those games, like, are you sitting there going, oh, wow. You know, I mean, like, that's a pretty – even with Syracuse, it's not an overly hard start minus the game against Georgia. I mean, like, Tennessee honestly has a great schedule next year again, you know, and everything's spaced out pretty well for Tennessee, where, you know, if they can mesh together as a team and find the right pieces and holes that they're trying to fill – could be right back in the CFP.
Yeah. Going off what Brent said, I think in terms of a fan's interest, I think the best thing about this article was the potential for a play-in game. I just think that would be so cool because, again, like going back to what we said, there's no sense in having a conference championship game anymore. Doesn't do anything. But to continue getting that money or some of it and to continue to have a game on that weekend, you put South Carolina against Alabama this year. I mean, that would have been one of the most watched football games of the season, probably just because of the implications that were on the line. I think there's a lot of interesting things in here. I mean, what's going to happen this week? What's going to come of it? You know, what's the timeline for all this stuff? You know, all that remains to be seen. But at the end of the day, Brent, it's essentially the SEC and the Big Ten just, calling their shots and saying, all right, we told you we were going to do this. We're going to do this. We have control over this. We're going to get the most money, and here's what we're going to do. It's whatever those two conferences want is what we're going to get.
Well, and remember this too, it's not going to affect 25.
Yeah.
Okay. Cause you're in a current deal that you're in right now. So you're not coming with an expanded playoff in 25. This is all going to be for 26 when the revenue split becomes totally different. I mean, the SEC and the Big Ten are going to get more money. I mean, for SEC and Big Ten schools, even the ones who don't have the huge budget, this is the gap year. Right. You got to get through 25 in a bit of a gap year. And then you're talking about bringing in a significantly more amount of money with TV deals and the college football playoff, the way that split scheduled to take place, potentially expanded playoffs. So 26 can look a lot better financially. In 25, you're just kind of getting, let's get there. We get through this gap year a little bit, but nothing with any of these playoff discussions that are going to come out this week and be talked about are going to yield in 25. It's all going to be about what it looks like in 26 and beyond. 26 through 31 is the next is that TV agreement that is scheduled to go.
And then if we can just kind of continue as we're getting away from amateur model, and we get more towards the NFL model. We talked about OTAs last week. We're not going to talk about it now, but if we can get a night where it's a made-for-TV schedule release that's not during the season, but it's in the off-season, then you're seeing this calendar kind of mirror that of the NFL, and I think eventually that's kind of what we're going to be in here the next couple of years is trying to make it a year-round thing and not just a seasonal thing, that being college football.
Well, what the NFL does that nobody gives them credit for is they have an event every month.
Yeah, they do.
I mean, there's something of note in the NFL every month. You have the Super Bowl in February. At the end of February, 1st of March, you got the combine. Then you got draft discussion. Then you're going to have the draft. Then you're going to go free agency. Then you go OTAs. Then you go training camp. Then you go preseason games. Then you're into the regular season.
Oh, I mean, May is the schedule release. The month of May is.
I mean, they have an event every month to capture attention. That's the NFL has done that so much better than any other league out there,
100%.
Amateur or pro. They have created storylines for their sport 12 months out of the year by events they've created.
And it's awesome because you're dialed in year round. You don't check out for months at a time. So right. I think from a fan's perspective, that's awesome. And hopefully, and we're seeing it kind of like with this, but hopefully college football, at least in my opinion, continues to go in that direction. A lot going on right now. No better place to stay up to date with everything happening than over at VolQuest.com. On the General's Quarters, baseball season happened this past weekend, or the start of it. A lot of the same. 3-run rule victories against a really bad team. 3-2-1s out there right now. You can check out all that. Be back in action later tonight for a midweek, and then coming up this weekend against Samford, which is a pretty decent team. Tennessee baseball is off and running. Tennessee basketball, it's hitting that home stretch right now. Tennessee football, still some slots to fill. No better place to stay up to date with it all than at the General's Quarters and at VolQuest.com. For Brent Hubbs, Austin Price, Rob Lewis, I'm Eric Kane. As always, thank you so much to Exterior Home Solutions for being the presenting sponsor of the show. You get a free estimate by dialing 865-524-5888. You can visit them online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. They've been local and trusted, number one for East Tennessee since 1999. Appreciate you guys joining us here on the VolQuest podcast. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday, everybody. You've been listening to the VolQuest podcast every week here on VolQuest.